Welcome to Tonia's Kitchen, where taste and nutrition go hand in hand. Here is Tonia King.
Today I have the pleasure of chatting with author Susan Gravely about her new book, Italy on a Plate, celebrating 40 years of her travels, memories, and menus of Italy, of doing business in Italy with her company called Vietri, and of making friends for life with some wonderful artisans. Thanks so much for joining me today, Susan.
Tony, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
This book is, it's simply amazing. You're celebrating 40 years now. Is that correct?
This year, 40 years.
That's incredible. It's from reading the book, it just seems like you have such a rich and diverse history with Italy and all the different people you've met, all the great food you've discovered. I don't even know where to begin, except tell me a little bit about how you finally compiled this book together after such a strong history.
Well, it was a lot of fun. I had thought about books for years because I was asked about, you know, write a business book, write an entrepreneurial book, write a book for women going into business. But my love was writing about the food and my experiences. So I sat down thinking, okay, it's 40 years in 2 years. This would be a perfect time. And I thought of the people and the places been really instrumental in my growth and my building of Vietri, the company. And then I kept cutting the list down, saying I want to represent different types of foods and different relationships. And that's how it started. I then worked with my young, passionate team at Vietri, and we then said, let's photograph their homes and their tables and then and add the menus of the recipes of food that you had all these years. And that's how it happened. Just was a kind of through osmosis and through these 40 years.
Well, I think you've chronicled it so well. It's really, really fun to kind of look deep and behind the scenes into some of your friends there and the way they cook, the way they eat, the way they're just involved in the Italian culture.
Yes. The thing you know so well is that the Italians have, you know, four or five main ingredients. And if you use those, you can make anything in Italy. I mean, they olive oil, garlic, onions, tomato, and then, you know, some herb or spice or pasta, of course. But they use these ingredients in everything, even in some of their desserts. And they eat totally related to the season. They talk about the food and what's growing all the time. And they eat very simply. They entertain very simply. And all of these things were impactful, I felt, for telling people that get too uptight about what they're going to serve, how they're going to set their table, and then they decide not to entertain.
Well, Susan, I am a pure-blooded Italian. I grew up with that lifestyle.
Girl.
We never ate anything out of a can or a box. I mean, everything was made from scratch. And I feel pretty lucky. I'm a first generation. What I'm interested in is, what have you discovered northern compared to southern? My family's from Calabria, so we're southern.
Bellissimo Calabria. For one thing, the north uses more butter.
Right. Yeah.
South does not use butter. The North will eat heavier foods because of their environments. They eat, I mean, rabbit is everywhere, but they'll eat more fowl. They'll eat more heavier foods. They eat polenta, where the South doesn't eat polenta. And the South eats a lot more fish, a lot more seafood. The other thing I see is that the olive oils change within each region.
Oh. You know,
some are greener, some are more yellow, some have more earthy taste, some are very light, and it has to do with the change of the soils. throughout the regions. Those are a few of the things I've really noticed from the very beginning. Now, also, I'm just thinking, the breads are so different.
Oh,
the
really?
Wine is so different. Yes. In, you know, Florence, they use no salt in breads. In the north, they use a lot of salt. They call breads by different names. A flatbread that we know of could be called three different things according to what the region is. So some breads are lighter, some breads are more heavy, as you know. So breads, olive oil, and just main ingredients of fowl to fish are pretty much the key things I can think of.
It's fascinating how diverse all the different people that you showcased in this book are. What have you found that maybe might have surprised you the most?
The biggest thing that I found as a Southerner being in Italy that feels so warm and inviting to every foreigner that goes is that there's a difference in when and how friendships occur. In the South, you immediately meet somebody, you just start talking with them, you leave that first conversation and think, gosh, I want to spend a whole lot more time because I could see that person as a friend. And then it would take, you know, something 4 or 5 times together where you're thinking, you know, maybe this isn't someone I want to spend a lot of time with. You'd hope that doesn't happen, but it does. Italians, they are warm. They enjoy new people, but it takes a while. It could take 5, 6 times of being around them for them to ever invite you to their table. And the table for me is not only the true table of inviting you to their home, but it's the metaphor of closeness, of a feeling that they're going to tell you a little bit more than those natural conversations. Once they invite you to the real table, invite you to their home, in their world, they have found you to be someone they consider a friend. And then the bond is never broken.
Well, they're bringing you in like family, and they're making you feel like part of a family. My whole upbringing, a big part of it was Sunday pasta dinners, and we always made our own pasta, but the table was filled with people and food. I remember when I first took my husband the first time to meet my mom, I think he got scared with the size of the bowl that was on the table of meatballs and pasta. So it's just a wonderful celebration of food and love and family. That's what I feel with the Italian culture.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, they say it's not a table unless you have at least 20 people. And that your husband saw. And
yeah.
Everything you just said is true. The first time I was invited for lunch with the Soleimani family, who do the first dinnerware we started the company with, there were more than 20 family members, and they also eat with all ages.
Yeah,
people roaming around, taking turns eating, or it's not like the children are at one table and
right.
We're at another. We're all together. And that is what brings so much pleasure.
It's so fun that you're actually a Southerner and you're so well-versed in the Italian culture. It's been such a big part of your life, right?
Oh, such a big part of my life. You know, growing up, my father was in international tobacco, so we had foreigners in our home all the time. And there was a standing globe, and he would show us, you know, somewhere in Europe or someplace in the Middle East or somewhere in Asia. And let's say it was Florence, Italy, and he'd point to Florence and Rocky Mount, North Carolina, and he'd say, look how small the world is. Phone call or plane ticket away. And so I never was afraid of traveling or exploring, though I adored home. My sister says, you know, I was a homebody, but I still am. I love to get home. But Italy wasn't one of the first places on my map. Once we took that trip And once we found that dinnerware and realized we were going to negotiate prices and all, I fell in love. I mean, well, I fell in love the moment we got to Rome. So, yes, it's a big, big part of my life, and the people are like family to me.
And what's exciting, Vietri then was born out of your first trip or so to Italy, correct? I love all your dinnerware and linens, and oh, it's just beautiful.
That is right. We had a quick funny story. We had been on Alitalia, and my sister went up to the ladies' room up in business class and met this a charming Italian who came down and talked to la mamma, the mother and two daughters, gave us names of restaurants in Rome and also his phone number in Florence. We ate at the restaurants in Rome, fabulous. Then went down to the Amalfi Coast and stayed at Il San Pietro, where it's carved into the bottom of a rock hill, and you get to the hotel by going down from the top of the mountain, through the mountain in an elevator to this hotel. And there they were using this, what we call Campania, but the Solimene dinnerware with all the animals and the flowers. And we hired a driver for 2 days until Mama said, I am treating y'all to this trip to be on vacation with me. But so you need to go and see things with me. But we were mesmerized, negotiated first prices, sat with a couple at the hotel from New York in clothing manufacturing who said, you clearly love to design and create. You should not retail. You should design and wholesale and distribute. Had no idea what that meant. New tobacco went across the ocean. And my sister and I said, let's try it. And that was it.
Wow. It's amazing. Some of the artisans that you've met that I noticed in the book that seem to be a big part of your company or had been. I don't know if they still are.
Still are. We work with about 20 to 25, depending upon the season and what we're introducing in Italy. Everyone is a true artisan. We use no decals. Everything is hand painted or hand glazed or hand sponged, like one fabulous manufacturer. And we still do in Italy wonderful and many glass objects, flower vases, etc. And everything is mouth blown.
That is just so exciting. My son is a glass blower.
He is.
He is. Well, your book is just like, it really hit home with me in so many different areas. Let's talk about some of the recipes. Can you share any of the recipes with us?
Well, one of the chapters is on Frances Mays, who wrote Under the Tuscan Sun, and she wrote the foreword. And she is a fabulous cook, is a wonderful friend of mine. She has been a mentor with this book and lives half-time in North Carolina, close to me, and half-time in Cortona. And she does such interesting crostinis, which everyone loves. It's an easy way to entertain with just a great glass of Prosecco or wine. And she has one that's peas and shallots.
Mm.
So easy. You basically, it's on page, if you have the book, 150.
Okay.
And you basically saute the shallots and the peas together so that the peas are still crunchy. And then you stir in mint, mascarpone, salt, and pepper. You coarsely chop it in a food process. And then you spoon it on bruschetti. And you serve it at room temperature. And it's beautiful because you've got those coarsely ground peas and shallots. And I always add a little parsley because I love parsley. But you've got that crunchiness on a crostini. And I also love anything that's green. So that would be a favorite of mine.
And that sounds like a perfect springtime appetizer.
It is fabulous springtime appetizer. I'm going to give you a main course I love, but for dessert, Tonya, she also, and I don't know why I stuck with her today, but they're called Frullini al Profumo di Arance e Salvia. It is an orange and sage scented shortbread cookie. Shortbread cookies, as you know, are very easy. I mean, it's butter, sugar, flour.
Right.
But you add zest of an orange, and then you mince up, she says 6, I added a little more, sage leaves. Just mince it up, and you mix it all together. And then you put it in either parchment paper, or I use plastic wrap, and you make it so it looks like a long hot dog. You know, when you buy cookies right. already made, you can put it in the saran wrap and chill it, but you can also freeze it and have them for, you know, a week and cut a couple every day. There's right. no way you can do it. They are so divine that you will make them and invite two friends and eat the whole thing. The of, as you know, Italian cooking is they don't use a lot of sugar.
Right.
So nothing is that sweet. So you really get that burst of sage and orange in this shortbread cookie. All you need is a little ice cream, you know, a little, you know, raspberry puree on top, and you've got a fabulous, fabulous dessert.
That sounds great with a cup of coffee or tea.
Ooh, oh, yes. I mean, I have stopped making them for a while because I eat so many of them. I will too, Tonya. They're divine.
The I can't wait to try it.
Being from Calabrese, I'm sure you eat a lot of fish.
I do.
Fact that you know this recipe, pesce all'acqua pazza, fish in crazy water. Isn't that the greatest name?
It is. Tell me how to make it.
Okay, this is how easy it is. First, it was given to me by this precious man named Giovanni Caresi. I have known him. He's from Positano. He's now maybe late 30s, early 40s. I've known him since he was 6 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
He worked in his uncle's ceramic shop called Ceramica Assunta in Positano, and literally would help customers and learn English. He and his wife now own the only ceramic stores in Positano. They have 3, and one of them is filled also with glass, many of the same glasses we do. But he's a beautiful cook. So here's this easy one-pot recipe. You cut up, you know, heat up, of course, olive oil, mm-hmm. and add to it a smashed garlic, diced onion, some celery, and a nice amount of cherry tomatoes and pitted Kalamata olives. And then you stir it until everything gets soft. You add some capers, and you, when it gets really done and the juice has, you know, halved, you fill up to the top edge of the last tomato or the sauce. You add water in a big, you know, just a big frying pan, just a big pan over, everything's over the eye of the stove.
Mm-hmm.
You put the white fish on top of that. You put the top on tightly. And with that, you just steam it so it's lightly, it's hot, but it's not too hot. So it's, I'd call it simmering. So it's a little bit bubbling. You keep it in that pot 10, 15 minutes. You open it up and you have the flakiest fish with this tomato and capers and olive sauce. Mm. And then you sprinkle just flakes of parsley so it looks beautiful. Add a little sea salt on top if you want. And there you go. Don't need anything else.
Wow, that sounds delicious. What kind of fish are you using, Susan?
I'm using North Carolina flounder. But you can use sea bass. You can use sea bream if you want. But I have done it twice. One with a, well, not twice. I mean, twice recently. One with a dark fish. It's not as good. It really is good. And I wrote it in the book for white fish, white fillets.
That sounds absolutely delicious. I can't wait to try that.
It is so easy, Tonya. It's on page 85. And there's a beautiful picture of it. The other thing we did is all of the recipes are created on V-A-Tree platters. And we put this specifically on Pesce Colorado, a colored fish swimming all over the plate, since it was my favorite fish recipe.
There is just a lot to absorb in this book. We're talking with Susan Gravely about her brand new book, Italy on a Plate. Now, what about finding you on social media, website, or how do we find out more about you, the book, and everything else?
Well, you can go to SusanGravely.com, and you can also go to Vatree.com. You can purchase the book through either one or Amazon, any of your booksellers. And our Instagram is Susan E. Gravely. So my website is without the E, Susan Gravely, and my Instagram is Susan E. Gravely.
Great. I've really enjoyed chatting with you today, Susan. This is just such a beautiful book, and it is dear to my heart, and I can't wait to experience more of these recipes. They just sound and look beautiful. The pictures are fabulous.
Well, thank you. We did this ourselves with a lot of love, and per un'italiana è un grande complimenti. For an Italian to be thrilled, that's the greatest of compliments. Thank you.
Absolutely. It is definitely bringing it all back home for sure. Thanks again for your time, Susan.
Thank you for inviting me to your show.
If you would like to find out more about today's guest, visit our Facebook page and check out our new podcast, Food Talk for Health, wherever you get your podcast from.